Tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. After an exciting White Sox game, we have comedian and host of Two Guys, One Album here on WGN Plus, Paul Farvar. With WGN sports analyst Mark Carmen, Chicago Tribune cartoonist Scott Stantis, and to discuss better living through show tunes, Kirk Stantis. But now, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, we are broadcasting live.
Buddy, it is a beautiful, really stunningly gorgeous Monday night in Chicago. I do love this weather. I know that it does mean that the end of summer is nigh, although it's supposed to warm up again in the next few weeks. And of course, we are having great weather, and I hope that folks down in Florida and those along the East Coast, I know they're ordering evacuations in a lot of the states that border the ocean, and there's a lot of concern. I have a lot of relatives who have weathered hurricanes in Florida and in North Carolina, and this is always a scary time. Remember that huge evacuation in Florida just 2 years ago? Was it just 2 years ago? Was it less than that? It seems maybe it was just last summer, but you have to err on the side of caution. I know a lot of people were frustrated about the kind of information that they were getting, but you would hate to have made the wrong choice. And there was a lot of damage to so many properties. My niece lives near Orlando, and that wasn't even in the eye of the hurricane. And they had flooding. They were boarding everything up. So I have to imagine there's a lot of prep work going in right now. Have you ever, Andrea, have you ever weathered something like this? Like tornadoes, we kind of get a heads up, right? But I've never been somewhere near a hurricane.
Not a hurricane. The year of the Plainfield tornado, I was living in New Orleans in the south suburbs, and that was awful.
Devastating.
Mean, because completely devastating, and we know what it did to Plainfield, but yeah. Many of those south suburbs, like, it passed through our block, so we had, like, loose shingles and the like, but the house, there was a house, like, one block over, say, south, and then one block over west, their house was completely leveled. They lost everything. It was heartbreaking. So that's probably the worst, but not a hurricane. Just a horrible tornado.
I have friends who I had the honor. It was my honor to be asked to come in along with April Macy to perform in Joplin, Missouri 3 months after their tornado. And when I say honor, they were in so much pain.
Oh, yeah.
Andrea, there were over 200 fatalities. And yeah. There's a woman named Jenta who actually worked for the morgue who would go. I mean, like, she knew so many of these people. Recovering bodies, identifying them, you know, bringing in family members. There was a father who came into the club where we were doing the show, and he came in and he said, "Oh, you ladies did a great job." He said, "I'm waiting for my daughter. She should be along any minute now." And he was just hanging out, and then he walked away. And one of his friends came over, and she said, "I'm so glad that you talked to him." She goes, "He actually lost his daughter in the tornado. He hangs out with her friends."
Oh.
And, obviously, was but when you drove through Joplin, the devastation, the absolute, it was leveled. There were entire blocks that were leveled, and you'd see piles. And this was 3 months afterwards. So I'm always, your heart just sort of goes out to folks who are wondering what's going to happen next. Some people, get used to it. They're like, "Oh, we've been through this before." You just never know what's going to be the big one.
No, you absolutely don't. In fact, I had a friend, a reporter friend of mine from who was working for a different station at the time, and went to Joplin, and she said, "I literally cried."
Yeah.
You know, you covered different stories, and so many stories affect you. You know, stories involving children or devastation or destruction like this, and this was one of them. She said, "I just had to stand off to the side and cry."
Yeah.
Which is what she did.
It's horrifying. So anyone who can hear us in reach, I know that at night we do reach 38 states and Canada, including our friends down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we have our very good friend who loves the show, who works at the Kennedy Space Center doing security. So hope that you are all safe. And do you happen to know what areas? I know that there are some. I know Maryland was also talking about some of the effects, even in Illinois, as far as our own state.
And North Carolina as
North Carolina is one of the big targets for this storm. So please, everyone within and I'm sure you're getting all kinds of information that is important to you. So please be well. And if you have any updates for us, please feel free to call or text us 312-981-7200. If you know anybody who is experiencing the weather, let us know. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. And it's interesting because, we're kind of covering it from all the different angles. And of course, one of the things as a side note comes up is how does it affect sports?
Right.
Right. Because the teams have to plan and you hope, okay, well, hopefully that's the worst it gets. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully it's not a lot of damage, and we're all planning ahead. But on the other hand, sports is a little bit of a distraction, especially if people were watching the Bears game last night.
Holy cats.
My timeline was insane.
Did you watch it all?
You know what I did? I watched the last minute.
Okay, see, at least
so
you saw
for me,
the last minute.
We were always
minute.
Losing.
I went see? To bed and we were winning.
See, I experienced it the way I think Bears fans probably would have wished they had experienced it. Like, oh, we're losing. Oh, we lost.
Oh, my God. One of the photographers from Channel 9 was in Green Bay, Ike, and I saw him this morning and I said, hey, why so down, Buttercup? And he went, I just came from Green Bay. I went, oh.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, Google. Oh, my God, we lost.
Is it better to lose there like that or to lose? It's better to lose there like that than to lose on your own.
Yeah.
On your own field.
I guess there. If you have to lose. Oh, but it's such rough. It's so awesome to win there, but it's so
when was the last time that happened?
I don't know.
Karma might be able to tell us later, but I think it's, I'm going to guess that it's been a bit. Since we've won there, but
did you give up? Were you at the last minute? Were you like, I'm done?
No, I watched the whole last minute because it was. But they were running down the clock in that last minute. God. They were really running down the clock. It was clear that there was going to be no opportunity for the Bears to even have a shot at it.
Yeah.
So, but I was on social media, and it, honestly, Andrea, it was like that scene in Star Wars where Obi-Wan Kenobi says, you know, there was a sudden scream and then everything was silent. I feel a disturbance in the Force, because my entire feed was like, oh, maybe we're going to the Super Bowl. I'm buying Super Bowl tickets. This is amazing. And so excited about the quarterback and all the, you know, just so jubilant. And then silence. And you could feel it. You could feel the energy coming off my phone or the lack thereof.
I believe it. Yeah. I can't believe, I guess I'm happy that I went to bed when they were winning, because I just, you know, I thought, oh, this is fantastic. Good. It's Green Bay. It's the first game.
They were ahead by 20 when you went to bed?
Yep. I went to bed. It was 20-0. And I took a double take. I went, they're winning? Oh, I'm going to bed at a great time.
There you go. Go while they're ahead.
Yeah.
And then things change. Michael, did you watch the game?
Yes, I did.
And what were your emotions? What kind of roller coaster were you on through the Bears game yesterday? Did you relive the entire season in the flash of your eyes?
I did, in fact. My outcome was a little bit different from most of the Chicago fans that I know, because my family is from Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Oh.
And so we're big Packers fans.
I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
You know what, though? There you go. Absolutely. I have a bit of a family divided, too. I have cousins.
Happens.
And I don't know why, but a couple of my cousins moved to Door County.
Okay, which is beautiful
another
country.
Another moved to Green Bay. He's a chef.
Okay.
So he relocated for work.
And became a Packers fan?
Yeah, and he became a Packers fan. And so did my cousin Angela, who I love, who went to the University of Illinois, moved to Wisconsin for her job and her husband. And, well, they're divorced, actually, now. And she still lives there.
That'll do it.
She's a Badger fan, a Packer fan. It's sad.
How dare she?
I know.
I think, what relative cook? It is brats and hamburgers?
I know.
Oh, boy.
He's a chef. Paul. I know, whatever.
You know, I'm looking at the...
He makes omelets. He works at a brunch place.
I'm looking at the rankings here, and it looks like the last time the Bears beat the Packers was in 2015, which is not too bad.
That's not too long ago. 3 years ago.
3 years, you guys. That's terrible.
But how many times in the last whatever? What's our record? Let's see.
Oh my! Wow!
Oh no! Then the Brewers beat the Cubs. Okay, Wisconsin. Enough.
Mm-hmm.
Take your foot off our throats. We get it. Go ahead and dance.
Well, Aaron Rodgers, rightfully so, he had to come through with a win because he just signed that four-year contract for $137 million for 4 years. The highest grossing quarterback in all of history.
We should divide and see what he makes a minute. You know how they do that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to be depressed?
And then we should divide it between the three of us?
I bet he makes more than we each make. In 1 hour, I bet Aaron Rodgers, that's like our yearly salary.
Every breath he takes.
Mm-hmm. You're not even thinking about the shoe deals and the endorsements and the jerseys that he gets to sell. We haven't sold one Patty Vasquez and Andre Darlis jersey yet this whole year.
Are those available?
Telling you, are they? Right. They're on like the clearance rack.
Make those available.
You know, do you remember?
Darlis would be great on a jersey.
Yeah.
Are there any Darlises?
You know what? When Northwestern signed with us, they gave us like a... Actually, and Eddie Olczyk got me a Darlis jersey.
That would look beautiful.
A Blackhawks. Yeah. I never wear it. I don't want to wear it, though.
Why? Bad luck? Or
no, I just don't want to get it dirty.
Oh, I can see that.
Mess it up.
Yeah. And I have a Vasquez Cubs shirt, but when we sang the seventh inning stretch, they gave us one. But here's the thing about that. Because they didn't broadcast us into the park, there was bad luck associated with it. So I wear it, and I'm not sure what the win-loss rate is when I wear it. I'll have to pay more attention.
Oh, yeah. Would you ever frame it?
I could frame it. I really love. I have a one of the hats too. Seven Things Stretch, like singer's hat.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I have
don't
one
ever
of those.
Give that up.
No, that one. I like my heart stops.
Some people throw them.
No. Well, we did. No one hurt us.
Oh,
so
right.
I felt like we could just kind of crawl away.
Yeah.
It was me, Pete McMurray, and Nick D, all the overnight hosts, and I. There was a sense of somewhat relief, but poor Nick and Pete, they were so game for the whole stadium to hear. You couldn't hear us on the broadcast, and you couldn't hear us in the parts.
See, that's
but. But they gave us our shirts with our names on it, and I'm with you. I'm nervous about because how do I clean that? And
have you
white?
Have you worn
I've
it?
I've worn it.
Okay,
it's so cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I agree with you. My biggest fear is like getting a big thing of chocolate ice cream spilled on it, or ketchup and mustard.
I wore the Hawks jersey sweater for a picture, mm-hmm. for like a photo op type thing, and that was it. And I haven't worn it since.
You gotta get one that you don't mind getting dirty. Maybe that's what we need, or jerseys.
Yeah.
Right? Ones that you don't mind.
I like
I could see not wanting to get that one dirty, and I should put mine in someplace safe. Yeah.
Wash it. And then, or have it dry cleaned,
right.
And then frame it.
Exactly, something like that.
Yeah.
But we need to have, because it's so, Darlis is a great name, so I could see that looking wonderful on a jersey. But yeah, I don't think, I have some Bears gear. I have definitely some Cubs gear.
I have a Forte jersey.
Oh, do you?
Which I think I got free.
So, wait, were we making a phone call?
No.
That was
I know. Michael.
Do I need to put that, I'll turn that off. It shouldn't be on the air, right? I can make phone. Do you want me to make phone calls? I've been told I'm not allowed to make outgoing phone calls anymore.
No, yeah, don't let that go.
Well, there were, now, Andrea, before you and I became a team, there were a couple times when listeners would text really horrible, awful things.
Okay.
Like using language. So there may have been a time or two where I was like, I have your number. Let's just go ahead and have a conversation. And they would always go to voicemail.
Oh, of course.
Then they would call back and they're like, oh, I didn't know you could read that, or I didn't mean it that way, which is one of the reasons we talk about if you wouldn't say it to our ears, if that's not a conversation you would actually have with another person, maybe you want to take a breath.
Yeah, absolutely.
And say that. But fortunately, okay, speaking of the text screen,
okay, yeah.
So you know how we play during our show when the White Sox are playing during our time slot, they play recordings of other shows.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll come in and there will be texts to the other shows because they don't realize it's not live.
Right.
So I'll come in and it'll say things like, I think this is great. I'm like, what kind of conversation was somebody having? Plus, weed is the perfect hangover cure.
Like, you sure that wasn't Roe's show?
I don't know, because that was at 6:43, so that was not during Roe's show. And then, of course, during the news, someone had asked this, because I know you've been covering the Laquan McDonald, Jason Van Dyke case.
Yes.
And I know they released some of the information. Obviously, the background, one juror is a Latina stay-at-home mom.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. And you know what? Quite honestly, I almost
do we need
wish,
those specifics?
Exactly. I know they're public knowledge.
Right.
I know that, you know, the judge in this case is very strict. Mm-hmm. So he will only release things that he deems very important. I think some of this should be kept private, though, because what if I describe, you know, it just.
Is it partly for the protesters? Because, you know, they want to know that there's a racially balanced jury.
I think part of it. And you know what? Truthfully, I wish they would just say I would give their gender and their race, or their whatever their you know, black, white,
they're being
Hispanic.
Very specific. Truck driver, black male truck driver,
right?
Who's not going to be on the jury because he would lose wages. I was listening to the. I'm such a legal dork, Andrea.
No. I'm the same way. I was fascinated because we have Ryan Burroughs covering it, mm-hmm. Stacey St. Clair for the Tribune, and Julie Unruh for Channel 9. So I'm getting three different, you know, the Tribune emails, the Ryan Burroughs emails, and then
all
Channel
the
9, and they're fascinating to me too. So I'm like taking, you know, kind of taking notes, and yeah, but they're very specific, like a white woman in her 30s, she's a professional record keeper, an Asian American man in his 20s or 30s involved in finance, a white man in his 60s who says he doesn't watch television.
Okay.
Which I found interesting as well. And then, you know, and again, you have to be in the courtroom to, I guess, appreciate this, but, you know, I hear this description. The fifth juror is a white woman in her 40s who says she's seen the video of Jason Van Dyke shooting Laquan McDonald, but has several questions about what happened.
Right. Which
I would think one of those sides would strike her.
Really?
You know,
because
she has
questions. The ones that think that they will, someone who will find him guilty, I guess.
Yeah. And I know you only get so many strikes or peremptory challenges. Mm-hmm.
How many? What's the pool of jurors right now? Do we know what they're down to?
They had 200, and I don't even think they're not even done with half.
And I have to wonder, too. I know they were reporting about the, I think Jason Van Dyke's legal team wanting a change of venue
right.
because of all of the protesting. And that, you know, there is something to that, too, because all the jurors are coming in. They have to walk through that.
Right.
They also don't want people to see them or know that they
right.
might be jurors.
Right.
But is there, I mean, has there ever been a possibility of having it be a secret location? It's open. I would imagine the front of the courthouse is kind of considered public property.
It is. It is.
Right. So how do you control that?
Right. You can go up to a certain amount. There's two sets of steps in. I think you can go up to the first set of steps, but then the second set of steps goes right onto the courthouse. So that's considered property, so they can't protest there. But when I was there last week, they were protesting in the street and then in that little grassy area, kind of the Midway Plaisance type area.
It's interesting because we've had this conversation about protesting. You know, I support protesting. In this situation, my question is, I understand that people are protesting for justice for Laquan McDonald, but justice to be served also has to be in the sense that the jurors come in with the ability to make a level-headed choice, and
right.
scaring them or trying to coerce them isn't that.
Right.
The jurors aren't the ones you can protest. Maybe the city of Chicago, you know, the police department, you know, if that's what, you know, obviously that's something that is important to keep the, you know, your eyes and ears open as to what the policy is and
mm-hmm.
how, what training is. And that's that, the alarm bell. But for the jurors, for the judge, you know, that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, no, I am too. I'm very, very surprised with how strict this judge is. I'm very surprised that they did not grant a change of venue.
Yeah.
It's,
well, maybe is there a chance later on that the judge will reconsider, I guess?
You know, that's a great question. We should ask Paul that, because I don't know once the trial starts if they could automatically change it.
He can
declare, you know, if something happens, he can stop the TV coverage. He can get the cameras out of, he can declare a mistrial if something were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's not out of the question at all. But I don't know if he can switch venues right in mid-trial.
Right. And by the way, I'm not saying that the police department should always be a target of protesting. I think that there is an argument to be made for what people are protesting. In this situation, again, protesting as the jurors are coming in is not, it doesn't, you know, it's, there's nothing we can necessarily do to prevent that. But if we can shield them from, so they can make the decision,
right.
so they can hear all the testimony and not worry about their own safety, I think that's important. By the way, you were wondering about someone who's never watched TV and they're in their 60s. The 870 says it's not very unusual. I watch zero TV.
That I understand, but to never have watched television?
They said never have watched?
I think he said.
Wow.
Hold on, he...
Because some people...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's correct. A white man in his 60s who doesn't watch television. You know, I don't... No, I do watch a ton of TV now. I was going to say, there was a time where I didn't watch a lot. I barely would turn on the TV.
I rarely watch live television anymore.
Not now, though. Really?
Yeah, I watch everything on streaming.
Yeah.
Everything is on streaming. If there's a video I want to watch that I see has come through, like, my media, you know, mm-hmm. the news services that I subscribe to.
Right.
But other than that, I hardly ever, like, I'll, like, WGN Morning News, because I want to see what Annabelle Laval's up to.
Yeah.
I would say WGN TV is the channel that I have on more regularly. I'm trying to convince my family to let me cut the cable.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we need this anymore.
My
poor mom is, like left dangling, because she's also on our DirecTV service.
Right.
And we, you know, we need to upgrade. But what were we going to say about cutting the cable?
No, I always, what I watch now is mainly news programs, you know, Channel 9, of course,
right.
Little CNN, whatever, for some national news. But you're right, everything is just, and especially our phones too, just blow up with the second something
right.
happens.
Yeah, I get
so
it. I get
it
right away.
On your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I try to read as much as I can. But even then, I'm not, I have this new app. It's Chicago News app. And it sort of, it's a landing space. They cobble together all the different, like, WGN Radio, WGN News, Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, all their stories.
Yeah.
So I can kind of go that way. So I keep, you know, I have a local sort of landing spot for everything.
The local angle, yeah.
Yeah. I like doing that. But there's just now it's, you know, it's like drinking from a fire hose. It's like putting your face up against a hydrant. With everything going on.
Oh, yeah, there's so
much.
That's why, again, I can't believe that no juror, you know, there are jurors that they're questioning and surveying who have no concept of this case or have never heard of this case, which to me is just. Wow.
I knew a woman who knew just and she wasn't like, I know nothing, but it, you know, we'd have conversations and I'd ask her, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about, like, let's say a teacher strike was coming up and she's
right.
like, oh, I didn't know the teachers were striking. And I'd think, gosh, it's on everything. Social media, it's on television, it's in the newspapers.
Yeah.
There are people who just go through life and do what they need to do. They're very focused. They're not really, they don't allow that to sort of get through for some reason.
Yeah.
I was fascinated, but yeah, she knew very little about local news. Something like this might not get through the filter.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
They want her on the jury.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's people who prefer entertainment. And I think for a lot of people, they have so much going on personally, professionally. All they want to do is have some entertainment. She loved shows like Supernatural.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on the CW, she loved How to Get Away with Murder, those kinds of things.
Love those shows.
Yeah.
Now I'm such a geek because I realize I tape Dateline, I tape 2020, I tape all kinds of ABC News, Channel 9. I mean, of course, I watch that every day. But yeah, I tape all kinds of news programs too.
Well, one of the other reasons I don't want to have
records.
I don't want to have DirecTV anymore. Do you know, I can't get CLTV.
You know what?
Why is that?
I can't either because it's only on Comcast cable.
It's only on Comcast.
It's not on AT&T, and you
I got to change things.
Sorry. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I keep looking for. I'm like, where are my friends? I can't watch Steve Cochran and Roe Conn during the day.
Oh, and by the way, CLTV has been given they're the TV station in town. They're going to be streaming the Van Dyke trial, as they say, gavel to gavel.
Okay, wait a minute. So they're going to be in court?
The whole case. They are allowed. The judge is allowing CLTV to broadcast it live.
That is interesting.
Isn't that? Yeah.
Do you think that's because they want to have transparency? They want people to know what's going on from moment to moment?
You know, I think so. For the longest time, the INBA had really lobbied to have cameras in the courtroom here. You know, and it's gone on since the days of the OJ trial. Mm-hmm. Because back then, there were not cameras allowed in the courtroom in Illinois. So now they really will petition. You know, and usually it's one station, which will be the pool feed,
right?
Which was the case here too. You know, they have not all the stations can do this, just CLTV. And then they had for a while just a few reporters who were allowed in the courtroom. They're so strict with this case. You know,
I can imagine. So, yeah. Well, there's a lot of worry that should the case go one way or the other, people are going to be very angry.
Right.
And that's something that we're all paying attention to. And that's why I was wondering if the judge is taking that into consideration. Like, let's make sure that people know what's happening from moment to moment. Do you think you'll be watching this? Like,
oh, I think I will be. Yeah.
Probably.
We're going to have it on here. In fact, Judy Pilek and I were talking about that. I said, we have to have one of the TVs on here all the time on that and just record on it, you know, because of what happens. I think it's going to be a fascinating case. I think it's going to be an interesting case.
Right.
It could be a precedent setting case. I think I would just urge, you know, everybody involved that everybody wants a fair trial. The prosecution, the defense, the jurors, they are going through, you know, great pain to select these jurors. And right now, Patty, as we were saying, you have a Latina, a white woman, an Asian American man, a white man, and then they don't give the race of the fifth juror, a white woman. And I'm sure we're going to see some African-Americans on the jury as well, too. But they've only selected five, so they have a ways to go. They're going to have four alternates, I believe, as well. So, you know, they're going to great pains to make sure that Jason Van Dyke gets a fair trial. So either way it goes, I would just encourage people to, you know, and we all want to say what we want to say about OJ or whoever. If we have a certain preconceived notion of someone's guilt or innocence, you're not in that courtroom. You know, you're not on that jury. You're not in that room deliberating. So I guess I would just urge everyone to be respectful of this jury and whatever decision they make.
I agree.
Whatever way it goes.
And from, we do have some questions. They're asking from the 773. What channel will have the trial again? That will be CLTV.
CLTV.
We'll be carrying that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. From the 847, hope you are staying on till 1 a.m. Yes, we are.
Yes.
And from the 312, I no longer have a TV since the analog signals were turned off. I recycled my 12-inch Sony tricolor and have yet to get a new one. No cable either. That's from our friend Bobby D, who wants to join in and share that. So, yeah, a couple people who do not watch TV, but they're listening to our show. And
yeah.
We'll take that.
And you know what? I bet a lot of people, too, you know, our first caller, too, and probably Bobby, I'm sure they check their phones or, you know, I just think everything now is right here in your hand.
You can choose when to watch something or listen to something.
As long as you're not driving.
Well, we choose to take a break right now. More in a moment on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and there's a lot of big news going on that needs a little bit of legal expertise. Of course, CNN's legal analyst Renato Mariotti does a great job of sharing that, not only on the air with us, but of course on CNN, and also his new podcast On Topic. Hey, Renato, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know if there's anything going on, if there's really anything important we need to talk about. The Supreme Court justice hearings were last week. Of course, Kavanaugh was subject to a lot of questions from Democrats and Republicans. You and I have talked about this, but it does seem as though it's a done deal, right?
Absolutely. You know, we did discuss that on topic this week with Neal Katyal. It really looks to me like this was a done deal as soon as the president chose Kavanaugh. He's someone with a very long paper trail. He's not the sort of person that a Republican president would nominate if he didn't have the votes. So I really think this is one that they may have run by senators like Collins before it was even nominated.
Is there any chance that as these hearings go along, that perhaps some of the things that come out of Judge Kavanaugh's mouth might change some opinions, or are we really at the point of no return, Renato?
I think we're at the point of no return. You know, Kavanaugh is a very, you know, like he's a smart guy. He's a very experienced lawyer and judge. He really didn't say anything all that surprising. Yes, there's been some controversy about some of his remarks being less than candid, but it just doesn't seem like the sort of thing that's moving Republican senators. You know, certainly he has very conservative views on things like reproductive rights, gun regulation. He's going to move the court to the right there, potentially, if not overturn Roe versus Wade, certainly gut it. But that's something that it seems like for all of the talk that Senator Collins has made, that her, Murkowski, and the other swing votes are really okay with him and okay with that scenario.
Did you see, Andrea, that people were sending hangers to Susan Collins?
I saw that, yes. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
And that doesn't seem to, that's like the kind of thing that is going to have any impact. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about states throughout the country that are whittling away, restricting access to reproductive rights. And if this does become something that the court takes up again, there's a distinct possibility that Roe v. Wade, if not overturned, as Renato said, will certainly weaken women's ability to have access.
Right.
And that's one of the things that, you know, people will turn to states like Illinois. Women are already coming here from Indiana.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because they have access. You know, in Indiana, they tried to pass this legislation where women had to provide proof that they had a miscarriage. They had to provide a death certificate. And Texas is trying to do the same thing. I believe it's been held up. It's been stopped in one of the courts. But eventually one of those cases might make it to the Supreme Court. Is that something you've heard anything about, Renato?
Well, there are a number of groups that I'm suspecting are going to be preparing test cases to bring to the Supreme Court once Kavanaugh is confirmed. Usually what happens is, you know, groups will try to find a very favorable plaintiff. You know, we saw that, for example, with the cake case this past year, the chef who was not interested in baking a cake for a same-sex couple, a wedding cake for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a case where, you know, freedom of expression is arguably an issue. They were able to sort of present, I think, a set of factual scenario that conservative group was able to present in a very positive light. The same thing is going to happen here, I think, in the terms of reproductive rights. You're going to find, you know, a statute that's drawn in a way that presents a factual scenario that is as favorable as they can for them. And then, you know, they're going to test this new majority. And, you know, to be fair, Donald Trump promised that he would appoint justices who would overturn Roe versus Wade. I think unless and until you hear otherwise, you should assume that that's exactly what he's doing. And I think Gorsuch is somebody we could expect to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. And I really don't see any reason to believe that Kavanaugh would be anything different.
You know, what's scary, not only the assault on women's reproductive rights, but just the misinformation that is out there and being accepted as facts. When he said the other day that birth control pills are abortion-inducing drugs, and you and I sat here and could name dozens of people, including ourselves, you know, there are young women who are on the pill at a very young age for ovarian cysts, for all kinds of issues that have nothing to do with sex or pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And just the misinformation out there that people are believing, and we can sit here and honestly say, that's not true. That is complete misinformation. Mm-hmm.
Well, what is very, I think, concerning, and it should be concerning no matter what side of the aisle you're on, is how little information we have about Judge Kavanaugh, you know, he refused to answer almost anything about his views on cases during these hearings. There is a lot of documents from his time in the Bush White House that have not been released. A number of them were released at the very last moment to the senators, but still many, many left to go. And I think that's unfortunate for the country. You know, obviously for political reasons, there's a reason that the Republicans want to rush this through before the midterms, but I think it's not the best thing for our country.
Well, and it's not unexpected that Donald Trump will have the support since he has a majority, right? But the fact that this seat is more significant in the sense that Kennedy was a swing vote. So he wasn't necessarily political. I mean, Supreme Court justices at this point really do tend to vote along the political party of the president who appointed them. Would you say that's somewhat accurate?
Well, I think the way I would put it, Patty, is that now political parties are very sophisticated about finding people who have opinions and ideologies that reflect their own views. So it is not a mere chance or mistake that, you know, people like Kavanaugh and Gorsuch were on the short list for President Trump. There is an organization like, for example, the Federalist Society that grooms people like them selects them and filters out people who might have different views.
Well, when you say the Federalist Papers, can you tell us a little bit about that and if there is a similar group on the opposite side of the political spectrum?
Sure. The Federalist Society was founded actually by a professor in Northwestern Law School here, Stephen Calabresi and others. It's been around for decades, and it is an organization that is very conservative and has sought to remake the judiciary in a conservative bent. They were reacting then to decades of movement in the left in the Supreme Court in the 60s. So they have been very, very successful at that. They, when I was at Yale Law School, there was, you know, the Federalist Society would be very active in recruiting and nurturing and grooming young conservative lawyers, and it's like that across the country. There is a group on the left that's similar called the American Constitution Society, but it was founded decades later. It doesn't have the resources and is not as entrenched and well organized as the Federalist Society. And I will tell you, the Federalist Society does a very good job of nurturing young conservative lawyers and, you know, generating a lot of folks like not just like Judge Kavanaugh and Judge Gorsuch, but others with a paper trail, but who have very conservative legal views.
So there are a lot of people who for many years are working toward this goal of getting someone like Gorsuch or Kavanaugh on the bench or Clarence Thomas. Or I know that I believe Alito and Scalia are also part of the Federalist Society. Yeah. So it's interesting to have these sort of well-organized groups that sort of, this is the end game for, I mean, can you explain to folks how important the Supreme Court is? Because I almost feel as though, you know, we're not taking into account that there are three branches of the government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. And so that right there should tell you how powerful they are.
Absolutely. And these are appointments for life. So someone who's a young, you know, fairly young man, like Brett Kavanaugh, you know, he's, I think, 52 years old. And we still have Justice Ginsburg on the court at 85. So, you know, literally potentially 30 plus years of Brett Kavanaugh's life can be spent making decisions that can affect all of us. And when we think about, you know, if you think about any issue that matters, we've obviously talked about reproductive rights. But, for example, gun regulation, you know, the Supreme Court struck down the handgun ban that we used to have here in Chicago. And Brett Kavanaugh is ruled in his current job that assault weapon bans are unconstitutional. So, the, you know, there's an example of an issue that is in the news and has very wide-ranging consequences, and the Supreme Court affects that. But really, any issue you you name, whether it's the environment or health care, you know, the Affordable Care Act, what you know people call Obamacare, that was a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court to uphold that. If one justice had changed his or her vote, you know, that law would be stricken down. And, you know, that's something that matters to a lot of people here in Illinois.
Isn't it hypocritical, though, of both sides, not just one, but of both sides, mm-hmm. through time, as they go through these hearings and they say, well, XVY, whatever it might be, is the law mm-hmm. of the land, and I'm not going to vote to change that. Yet they have in the past with mm-hmm. their decisions, and they could in the future with how they could impact. So isn't that just hypocrisy on both sides?
Well, I think what it is, you know, there was a very contentious Supreme Court hearing back in the 1980s for Robert Bork, who was a conservative, who was nominated by Ronald Reagan, and he was very forthright with his views, and he ultimately was not confirmed. And what we've seen since then is nominees twisting themselves into knots. To say as little as possible or to just try to assure folks that they're going to do very little or kind of keep things in place. And, you know, I think Judge Kavanaugh has really taken that to a new level in terms of saying very little about anything. And at times, I think it seems deceptive to me to say, for example, Roe versus Wade is the settled law of the land. You know, which he did say apparently to Susan Collins, you know, that all that means is that is the law right now. And as he revealed in an email, there was an email that the senators dug up in which he talked about how, you know, it's not really accurate to say that it's settled law because any settled law can be overturned, as you pointed out, by 5 justices at any point.
Right. I have a listener. I feel like these two listeners are arguing with each other because the 815 with a different number says, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, women will riot in the streets. And then 815 says, you know damn well if this nominee was a lib, you would be all for them, you hypocrites. However, as I stated on my show when we used to be on pretty late, we had a conversation with Eric Elk and Ken Jacobowski mm-hmm. and Dave Lundy, and we all felt that Gorsuch seemed like somebody who felt right in line with what Trump wanted to accomplish, seemed like a good legal mind. I watched a lot of the hearings, and I thought he was fine. This is a different seat, and if it was someone like Kennedy, who also was appointed by a conservative, I like Justice Kennedy, who seemed to, and I actually like Justice Roberts. So mm-hmm. I have to call nay on the your claim from the 815. I got receipts. I have recordings of our mm-hmm. show saying that I did support Gorsuch. But thank you for the all caps. Maybe your button is stuck.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Go ahead, Renato.
I was just going to say, look, Brett Kavanaugh, make no mistake about it, he's a very intelligent man. He's a very accomplished lawyer, very accomplished judge. You know, he was several years ahead of me at Yale Law School, but, you know, I had heard about him when I was much younger, earlier in his legal career. He's certainly very well respected by people on both sides of the aisle. I don't think I don't mean to suggest otherwise. I think that whichever side of the aisle you're on, you have to realize that judges come into these, particularly judges that are very carefully vetted and chosen to you know generate potential outcomes. They have a perspective that they're bringing to this that has consequences. And you know back in the last decade, there are conservatives who are very, you know, concerned about the impact that Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor would have in the court. And here we're seeing this in another direction, but a direction that is going to represent a real shift, as you point out, Patty, in where the court is at.
Let's take a quick break here. More conversation with Renato Mariotti, who hosts the podcast On Topic, and you can see him regularly on CNN as their legal analyst. Follow him on Twitter at Renato Mariotti. And more with him, if you want to actually ask him a question, you can call or text us at 312-981-7200. I wanted to also pick your brain about the protesters outside the Laquan McDonald Jason Van Dyke case here in Chicago. More on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, 720 WGN. If you got any legal questions about what's in the news, Renato Mariotti's your guy. He's the senior legal analyst for CNN, and he's also the host of his own podcast, On Topic. You can follow him on Twitter at Renato Mariotti. And his guest this week was a former acting solicitor general. I'm sorry, who was it again? I apologize. So many names.
Oh, no, by Neil Katyal, who was essentially a solicitor general, the lead lawyer for the United States before the Supreme Court, and he's argued dozens of cases before the Supreme Court, including the travel ban case.
So what's the difference between the Solicitor General and the Attorney General then?
Solicitor General is under the Attorney General, and the Solicitor General's job is focused on representing the United States before the Supreme Court, not okay. in other matters, so just in the Supreme Court.
Okay, so let's say, as the White House has asked today, they're asking the Department of Justice to investigate who the unnamed
sources.
Unnamed sources from the New York Times op-ed piece. You wrote a whole piece about how what that person did is actually not illegal.
That's right. So I wrote a piece in Politico magazine this past week that discusses, you know, what are the potential ways in which this person could have legal liability? And there just really aren't any, unless the person writing that op-ed took the small honorarium that the New York Times pays its op-ed writers, which I assume that person did not do. But otherwise, you know, if you think about the different ways that the person could be in trouble, for example, you know, it's a crime to reveal classified information. But there's nothing in the piece that is even remotely classified information. You know, it's also a crime, for example, you know, it's also, you know, can be a crime if you know of criminal activity and you're helping to carry it forward or you're failing to report it. But there's nothing in that piece at all that suggests that the person knows anything about a crime. So really, you know, and just to be clear, one of the things that obviously is at the heart of that op-ed by the untitled author in the New York Times is that they didn't follow the president's instructions. You know, they were not carrying forward exactly what he wanted. And that is certainly to me as a citizen, that's very concerning and disturbing, but it's not a crime at all. And it's completely improper and not within the mission of the Justice Department to be investigating people for non-crimes. We don't do that in the United States, or at least we shouldn't be.
So yeah. I guess I have a twofold question, Renato. So say this person turns out, say this is someone within the administration. Can the journalist continue to protect their source without getting in trouble? And I know a lot of journalists have gone to jail by doing this. Can the journalists not keep protecting their source without getting in trouble? And what if it is revealed that this is someone high up within the Trump administration? Could that person face any sort of repercussions?
Okay, well, the second question's easier because that person, other than getting fired, I don't see any liability for that person whatsoever, civil or criminal, and I kind of outlined in that piece. I just don't see any way that person gets in trouble. You can't get arrested for a non-crime. Mm-hmm. That person has constitutional rights and would be able to challenge that in court.
Okay.
It might be trickier for the New York Times if, for example, let's say that, you know, Jeff Sessions went along with what the president is suggesting and Sarah Sanders is suggesting and has an investigation of something that doesn't appear to be a crime at all. And there's a subpoena that's issued to a reporter at the New York Times, or to the op-ed folks at the New York Times. You know, they could certainly try to challenge the subpoena, and it on its face, it appears that, you know, as I wrote, that there's no potential crime here. But they're in a trickier position because their rights as people responding to a subpoena to challenge the subpoena are a little different than if charges are being brought. You know, you don't have a right as somebody who is having a subpoena served on you to know everything that the Justice Department is doing. And you could imagine somebody who is corrupt suggesting to a court or maintaining that there's some criminality, evidence of criminality that the rest of us don't know about. But in this circumstance, I think it would be very difficult to convince a court that there is criminal behavior here. And this would just be improper on so many levels. I would have to think or hope, I should say, I hope as somebody who used to work at the Justice Department, that there would be people who would be unwilling to carry forward these orders and would resign and let the world know what was happening if such an investigation was actually to take place.
Yeah, it's so strange. It's strange that there's somebody in the administration who thinks that they know better than the American people who voted, at least the people in the Electoral College who put Donald Trump in the office. It's not their job.
Right, yeah. For the people, by the people.
Not some high-ranking senior official. Mm-hmm. Okay, my producer's head is going to explode. We're going to clean the glass later. But I just got to know what your thoughts are on these protests at the Laquan McDonald case, the Jason Van Dyke case.
Well, I will tell you, it's jurors are human beings like anyone else. I don't expect that they're going to be sequestered, although that I don't know if that's been determined yet. I don't think it has. And, you know, when they're going into that building, they're going to see those protests and they're human beings. And they're going to realize, I think, the importance of this case and how much it means to people if they don't already know that. And what we've heard from jury selection today is that the jurors are aware of coverage. Some of them have watched the video and have seen some of the coverage out there. So while they say they can keep a fair mind, there's no question that that's going to have an impact on their thought process.
That's what I thought.
And that's what we thought.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. All right. Thank you so much, Renato Mariotti. Again, follow him on Twitter at Renato Mariotti. Subscribe to his new podcast On Topic. And we look forward to checking in with you again, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Have a great evening. More after this on 720 WGN. I tried to be fast, Mike, but then people are like, you talk too fast. But I'm like, I have so much to say. Big sports news yesterday as the Bears lost in the fourth quarter, even though they were up. They went into halftime. Andre went to sleep. They were up by 20.
I did. I went to sleep. I thought, oh, we got this.
Good stuff.
We got this.
I love Serena Williams, and I have been a big fan of hers since she first came on the scene with her sister Venus, and have really enjoyed watching their careers. And there's been a lot of talk lately about whether or not some of the clothing that she wears, whether or not it was feminine enough.
Right.
Or the bodysuit appropriate, right?
Yeah, and then like the tutu. And,
yeah, so she came out in a tutu.
Yeah.
So we have Mark Carmen, who has actually, I think he was at the U.S. Open. Now I feel like I have three tennis experts.
Yes.
In the I think so. At least on the air with me right now. I have comedian and attorney Paul Farvar. So I think you're doubly sort of invested because, you know about rules and you can dissect this kind of a story. Oh, Carm is not on the line. So maybe Carm forgot that he was on the air with us.
He might have got scared.
So two tennis experts. But oh, yeah, you played.
No, you guys.
I played in high school and rec college for 2 years. You played in college.
I walked on and then walked off in college.
So we've played, but we were
state champion. I want to point out, and
we were
2 years in a row in high school. I was on the bench the whole time.
You were state champion in high school.
Our high school, Hensel Central.
We were conference and sectional champions.
No, I'm not. This is not about. No.
I want to get one upped on everybody here.
I don't.
Damn.
You're both champs in my eyes.
Aww.
But who's the bigger? Who's the bigger champ? If you had to sit,
that's right. If you have to pick
tennis, based on what you know so far,
you know you could say. Paul for singles, me for doubles.
Okay. Are you comfortable with that?
I was actually doubles myself, but
what?
We'll just agree to disagree.
Okay, we'll just agree. I understand what's happening.
No, but we're both tennis fans. Like, I used to go to the Virginia Slims. You would go to tournaments and stuff and watch.
I was going to go to the U.S. Open last year because a friend of a friend was in the finals, Kevin Anderson, who went to the University of Illinois. And I didn't go, but he ended up losing anyway.
And I've never been to the U.S. Open.
I met Andre Agassi once. I gave him directions at North Avenue Beach and where the best place
long-haired
was to watch.
Andre Agassi or
it was
bald?
Long, it
you know
was
that
long-haired.
He's...
Yeah,
that
so was a long time ago.
You know
was
my joke about that, right?
No.
Well, if you look at my picture for my business cards, it's my hair bleached long. Like, I called myself the Persian Andre Agassi when I was a kid. Which is ironic and stupid because he's already Persian. So that's how smart I was.
You know, it's funny. That was one of the posters I had in my college dorm was Andre Agassi. And now every time I think of that, I'm just going to think of Paul. I'm going to think of you.
I thought I was him. Like, it was unhealthy. I had, like, his outfit. I used the same tennis racket as him. I went to Nick Bollettieri tennis camp because of him.
Did Andre ever have any breakdowns? Did he ever melt down on the court and smash a racket or go...
No. I don't remember
on anybody.
I think a lot of them at some point, you know, would scream or do a, and they all.
He was known for, he would get in trouble because he would he would grunt a lot.
Right.
And there were people that complained about that. Mm-hmm. But he would do other things that were questionable. He used to be known for tanking purposely if he was losing a set. And then he just like, I'm just going to lose a set and just do well in the next set.
Didn't he do a Wimbledon you have to wear all white? And didn't he get in trouble one time because he had like a pink stripe or something?
And he had the denim shorts.
Yes. Oh, he did. Right. He got in trouble because Wimbledon is all white. But
Wimbledon has crazy rules.
Yeah, they do.
But this whole thing, going back to your question.
So Serena was called on a coaching violation, which her coach was telling her to move back up into
allegedly,
the line.
Allegedly, yeah.
Well, allegedly, and usually players are given a soft warning, like, hey, your coach is messing this up for you.
Right.
But she was given the violation without any conversation. Is this your understanding?
Yeah, that was my understanding as well. And he did admit to it later or acknowledge that.
The coach did?
He said he was trying to signal her, you know, whether that means,
whether that's coaching or not, right.
Exactly, because, right. I mean, you can use, you know, if you're playing a doubles tournament, you can signal your partner, but you're not allowed to take any sort of coaching or signaling from the stand.
Off
so
the
I
court.
Think, yeah.
Correct.
So I think that's where the curiosity came from. Was he trying to coach? Was he trying to signal? Is that the same thing? And whether or not she actually saw him do it, she says
or
she
heard
did
it.
Not.
Yeah.
And I kind of believe she didn't. Because
it's
I think
loud.
She's an amazing athlete. It's loud, right? You're focused. You're in that moment. You are not. I don't think anyway, looking up into the stands for coaching, especially at her level. She's
right.
so good. She doesn't need that.
Well, and that's what she basically approached the judge and told him as much. I don't cheat. I don't need to. Anyway, so, and Mark Carmen joins us on the line. Now, Carm, were you at the U.S. Open this year at all? I think you were there earlier, weren't you?
Yeah, Patty, I was there day 1, 2, and 3, so a little while before Serena had her meltdown.
You missed the meltdown, yeah.
So, so this has become a thing where, so eventually she got more worked up.
Right.
Tell us what she was fined for. She ultimately got a $17,000 fine in addition to the points being awarded to her opponent. But tell us what the next thing was after the coaching violation that she was fined for or penalized for.
So, okay, you're not allowed to throw your racket on the court. And she was, in the second set there, she lost it after one point. And I lost it a little bit strong, but she spiked her racket down, broke it, and that is called racket abuse. And she was, normally that would just be a warning, but since she had already been warned for the coaching, they took a point from her starting the next game, Love 15, which she wasn't expecting. She's back on the court after losing that game. Then she throws her racket, and then she's back on the court for the next game, and she's down Love 15. So now she's incensed because they took a point from her, and she doesn't feel that's right. And for the record, she shouldn't have had that point taken away from her because she should have been penalized for the coaching. There's just a lot of nuance to this. She's wrong, but she's right. She's right, but she's wrong. All at the same time. Go ahead.
Well, it also became a thing where she said, this is sexist, this is racist. That's what a lot of the social media has jumped on this, on both sides of it. I actually liked Martina Navratilova. I can't say her name.
Navratilova.
That's the one.
Yep.
She's basically saying just because the guys do it doesn't mean it's right. And the judge didn't give her a soft warning. He should have given it should have gone a little differently. Who knows if Serena maybe would have kept her cool and felt like it was unjust, but we'll never know that. But I you know, at first I was like, oh yeah, the guys lose their minds. We know for decades guys have like thrown temper tantrums, but that wasn't cool either.
Right.
Yeah, Martina's dead on. And that's the thing. It's like, look, yeah, that's true. John McEnroe acted like a complete clown. Guys will go off and maybe get away with it now. But in the spirit of what's going on, you don't get to carry on and carry on and carry on at the umpire because you're Serena Williams and make threats like you'll never ump a game.
Yeah, what was that?
That was just
that got ugly.
It did get ugly. It did get ugly.
Oh, yeah. She said you'll never ump the Open again.
Oh, yeah. Right. So she's throwing her power around. It just reeked of somebody who's always gotten everything in life that they've ever wanted. And for the record, I love Serena.
Me too.
But she just needed to let it go, and she, for whatever reason, could not let it go.
That initial one, when I started watching it, that first rant went on for over 4 minutes, and I thought, You have to be. I hate the word sportsmanlike because, you know, sportswomanlike, however you want to say it. But
right.
Yes, it sucks. It's awful. You know, it just, and you know who I felt most sorry for was Naomi Osaka, mm-hmm. because this is her idol. Like, she's playing against her idol, and to watch just this breakdown, it just, I don't think it was fair to her either.
Oh, gosh, no.
Well, I don't know. I kind of disagree with you, Mark, not because you beat me at tennis, but also because...
Thanks for bringing that up, Paul.
I just want to make it clear that you did beat me, but we haven't had a rematch, but we'll agree to disagree on that. The issue I had was whether she even heard that soft warning or whatever when the coaching violation happened. And I've been watching finals, at least at that level, when people are coached or there's some sort of violation, it should be known that the person heard it, you know, just to acknowledge that she heard it. And for the judge to get, or for the ump to get involved in it at such a high level, you know, it's hard to overcome that. It's a mental game. And to have a point, then, I mean, obviously the racket abuse, that's a no-brainer. She shouldn't have done that. But the first, the where this all stems from is the coaching violation, which I've never seen anyone. Have you ever seen that happen in a final where someone's gotten a warning on that?
I mean, I haven't seen it in a final. I haven't seen it in the first round. So
yeah.
You know, and not saying it hasn't happened, because of course it has, but
sure.
Just, you know, that's where, you know, Paul, look, you're an official. You're there to officiate the game, seen, not heard, and to step in a final to, you know, just insert yourself into the match when it's just, you know, there's no way that he could have thought that, ooh, she's getting some unfair advantage right now.
Right.
It's just, it's, right. It's way, way, way off. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, that's the dude that has the power.
Yeah.
He's wrong. He's a complete imbecile. I don't know if he had a beef with her or not. But, you know, what are you going to do? You're gonna allow that to completely impact you and end up costing you a final where, you know, it's just that's. You got to get past it. And you would think, you know, this is not somebody who's new to this. I mean, Serena's had meltdowns at the U.S. Open mm-hmm. before. She's had meltdowns in other courts. It's something that she should be better than.
Well, and one of our listeners texts that she needs to surround herself with more positive people. And I don't know, at this point in her career, it's like, as you said, this is not uncommon for her. This is the level at which she plays and the way she has managed herself. So I don't know. I don't know that it'll change. Carm, it sounds like you're yawning and we have to go to a break. But
how did you hear that?
I heard it.
I heard it too, Mark. It's okay, though. We love you. We love you. We're all sleepy. It's okay.
It's okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you on that, but here's what it sounded like. So I'm hoping it was a yawn. We got to run.
Why can't I be out for a run? All right. Thank you.
Sorry, Carm. I just have we have a bunch to talk about. Unless you want to hang on for another. I know.
No, right, you're great.
All right. Go take a nap. Get some rest.
Okay. See you, Mark.
You work really long hours. We appreciate your time, Carm. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys.
More after this. I want to talk about some of the cartoons that came out because we happen to have someone who does that very work. More in a moment on 720 WGN. The Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and we've been talking about the Serena Williams. What's the name of the woman who actually won? Because I apologize. Naomi?
Osaka. Yeah.
And a listener from the 301 says, I have to agree with Andrea. I felt bad for the winner. Her first Grand Slam win was overshadowed by all this drama.
Right. And going in, too, mm-hmm. she's like, Serena's my idol. I grew up, you know, she watched her. That's her idol. And, you know,
they were booing when they announced her name. I mean, it was so bad. Yeah. But Serena did the right thing and was like, come on.
Yeah,
guys.
Right.
And one of the things, again, you know, people jumped on social media and said this is racist. Other people said that she's playing the race card. And, of course, cartoonists jumped in. What?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Scott Santis joins us because I saw one on my friend Ruben Raru's page. He is the warm-up guy for the Steve Harvey Show, and he works for Disney. And he posted
one of Serena on the court stomping up and down. She looks huge. Her very thick-lipped, the hair very sort of animalistic. I mean, in many ways, he goes. He basically, Ruben said, "We're not even going to pretend anymore, right?" And so I, and then he took it down because he said it was just too painful to see on his page anymore. He's a black, he's a black guy who just didn't want to see it. So I googled and I found three other cartoons from around the world, and I sent them to Scott and Andrea and Paul and Carm. And I know that, you know, it depends on what you're looking at. But once I saw the sort of trend and the way she was being depicted, I wanted to know, as somebody who does draw people of all, of different genders, sexuality, of race, of body type and size, because people have complained to you. But when it came to these four cartoons, what were your thoughts on these?
Well, the first one, the one you describe, is over the top, but at least there is some kind of sort of maybe effort to depict the scene.
Okay.
Now, for those of you who haven't seen these cartoons, all of them are Australian.
Okay.
Australians have a reputation for not being, how can I put this, racially sensitive.
Right. Which would be one thing if these weren't now available around the world in the matter of a second.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's, I'm looking at these cartoons, and the last one, and I wish I could describe it. It's a, I guess it's Serena, but she has this flat nose. It looks like it's a racist cartoon from the 1920s.
And that's what I felt like, you know, the sort of during the Jim Crow era, and trying to keep black people in their place was what these cartoons seemed to harken back
right.
to.
Right. And I don't want to go into the deep weeds of the history of Australian cartooning, but they are fairly racist, and they are, and they always have been. There's a cartoonist, Pat Oliphant, great cartoonist, came to the United States, won a Pulitzer Prize, was viewed as one of the really one of the great cartoonists in American history. However, there's always a however, when Barack Obama gets elected president, he always drew him as virtually coal black, thick-lipped, and it was just like, it was insane. It was absolutely insanity because Barack Obama doesn't look like that.
But it's a trope, right? So we kind of go back to those.
It's lazy cartooning first and foremost, but it's also racist. It just goes back on racist stereotypes.
What kind of considerations do you make when you're drawing people of different backgrounds? Because I went back and I looked at a few of yours, and you seem to want to imbue people with their human aspects rather than the sort of stereotype of what we think of black people or Mexican people or Asians.
No, it depends.
Although in your cartoons, I look Asian. That's because when I smile, my eyes get very small.
They do.
Right.
You have this big smile that takes over your face.
But I've always been called that, so I get that, but I'll bet you get a lot of complaints and people who accuse you of a lot of things.
Oh, of course. No, you can't, you know, especially it depends on who's, you know, whose ox is being gored.
Well, I better do this before I get my ox gored. If you're a regular listener to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, you know that every Friday night we play a little game called What's That From? And Roger Badish does an extraordinary job of finding a scene from an iconic movie, but no one ever knows what scene that is. I think I need to talk to Roger because it started out with like the one of the first scenes we did was, you can't handle the truth, right? So I mean the fun part is like us being stupid doing the scenes.
Right. And knowing what we're and kind of figuring it out as we go along too.
Yes. Like there's some dialogue leading up to that.
Is that
lines.
From? That's okay. Dude, Where's My Car?
Yes, yes. And we did Inconceivable, you know, that kind of stuff.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So recently, I believe I was fortunate enough to miss the musical version that you had to do one. Musical did you guys do?
What did we end up doing?
See, you guys don't even know.
We did Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, that day.
Yeah.
Were you there that day?
I don't.
Yeah, you were there, Patty.
Let's do
You just
time
forgot about it. You're trying to keep it out of your...
again.
Yeah, but usually, you're right.
She
blacked
it out.
These movies are just so obscure. They're, you know, from the 20s and 30s. And
well, that's not... But it's the scenes.
He's going to do silent films soon.
The movies aren't that obscure. The scenes are. That's what's so... which also is now making it funny too because we'll just have crickets when we ask people what's that from. So I'm hoping that we can steer him away from doing any more musicals because I do love musicals. I just can't sing, but I have to say I grew up on a lot of the great musicals of the 30s and 40s, like Fred Astaire movies. I loved in the 50s Gene Kelly movies and those kinds of flicks. But do you have any show tunes that are some of your favorite? Like I love Sound of Music.
Oh my God, yeah, I love Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I like the more modern day musicals.
Okay.
Chicago, Moulin Rouge. I loved Moulin Rouge.
See, now I wonder if there's anybody who could tell us what our favorites say about us, because I'm not sure if that's part of what Kirk Stantis does as the host of Better Living Through Show Tunes. Have you ever, tell us a little bit about this show that you do.
It's a probably the only on-air radio show that does show tunes.
Okay.
It's 1 hour every Sunday, 2 to 3, broadcasting on WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Listener-sponsored radio.
So what is better living through show tunes?
It's fun. I grew up with show tunes. So I just like them,
mm-hmm.
And I think other people like them. I do play a lot of the old nuts that are kind of people like Camelot, so forth and so on.
Oh, sure.
On.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. So that's what I play. There are two other hosts that play more of the modern stuff that you like, Chicago and so forth, and one that is very knowledgeable about show tunes in general, and he gives all the knowledge stuff. So that's his job. We call him the professor.
You should, well, the professor or somebody should do a segment on what your favorite show tune says about you.
Yes.
Like for me, like these are a few of my favorite things would be, is that considered a show tune?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the musical?
Yeah. Sound from of Sound of Music, yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah. The Julie Andrews version.
Not the
Juliana Hough one.
No, not the Barbara Streisand. I love Barbara Streisand.
Or the gay version, that was interesting.
What's
too.
The gay version?
Oh, there's one on the Oklahoma, and it's the sound of something I forgot. But it was an all gay cast. It was different.
Okay.
It was different?
Yeah, it was different. Well, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Okay.
In my world of musicals.
Right.
So, but that's what I do, and it's just fun. And people enjoy it. It's 1 hour on a Sunday. People, you know, especially in Wisconsin where it's always 72 degrees and a whisper of a breeze, when it's not like that,
it's a little
people
chilly.
Enjoy sitting at home and listening to musicals on a Sunday. So it's fun.
I love that Chicago is one of your favorite, and Moulin Rouge is another one of your favorites. I have a friend whose daughter knows all of the songs to Chicago, but she's 7.
Oh, that's right. Cool. Oh,
sure. And she'll sing, he had it coming.
You know? Right, right. Cicero, pop.
Right? Joe House Tangled, nice.
Yeah,
exactly.
Big Mama it. Morton. Funny. Well, right now the kids are doing Hamilton, the young kids.
Okay, so
it's cool.
Okay.
Hamilton.
So another one, though, do you think there are any songs in that are too adult for kids?
No.
Okay.
You know, we were just singing, Scott and I were just singing today, the George III song, You'll Be Back.
Okay. A listener says they really enjoyed the recent musical, The Greatest Showman, with Hugh Jackman, of course.
I never saw that. It's on my list.
I think you would like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just haven't seen that.
That's a fun one.
What's interesting is to watch Broadway. You know, I watch New York. Now, I'm not the... absolute expert on musicals, but I keep in touch and I look at what's going on. It's amazing how many musicals go up for 1 week and then boom.
Oh, really?
Poof. But some of them have great music.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So.
There's one now I would want to see if I was in New York, but I'm not going to fly out there to see the Head Over Heels musical. Mm-hmm. Is that on Broadway or off Broadway?
It's on Broadway now.
It is on Broadway. Yeah. So it's all Go-Go's tunes, correct?
Yes.
But okay.
Yeah. The Go-Go's?
It's their songs, but it's set to like a French
kind of like Mamma Mia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mamma Mia is another one. I love that one.
Okay.
Yes.
I do.
Very popular.
I do.
Yeah, the jukebox musicals are very popular. It's becoming kind of a producer's way of quickly getting a show on Broadway.
Yeah. It's fascinating which musicals have sort of this rebirth. And somebody just texted in Funny Girl. I haven't seen that one make the rounds recently.
No. Well, there's a lot of them that we think are good just don't come back because they don't think there's going to be an audience. They don't think it'll tour well.
Okay.
That's the other thing they look at is getting on tour and will it merchandise.
Sure.
So they call it show business for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, we love the art.
So the producers, but not Funny Girl.
Yeah. Oh, the producers, great. Great show. Great musical, very funny.
I've never seen stage or movie version of that.
The stage version is great. My daughter did an amateur version of the producers and was the beer mug in one of the scenes of Springtime for Hitler. And she was going off stage and had the beer mug. It's about 3 feet off her head. And she was going off stage for opening night and forgot that one of the lights was about that height, hit the beer mug, and it went rolling back on stage, and I had to go get her beer mug.
Kids chasing after their beer mug.
I saw the producers. I was lucky enough to see it here in Chicago on stage. Mm-hmm. No way. I had never seen the Zero Mostel, the original, so I had no idea. At the time, it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
It is. It's hysterical. But that's why I like musicals. It tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them, you walk out. My rule of a good musical commercially is that you should have two tunes that you come out whistling, humming, doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's commercial success. Other people feel that a good musical is like Sondheim, which you really is difficult to hum.
Okay.
So, but that's my rule.
So you grew up enjoying show tunes.
I did. My mother played music and my dad would be home. He was in television. He'd listen to music on the stereo device and listen to it and ask me, what do you see? What do you hear? What do you think that is? Because he would be doing it for a show he was producing or doing whatever.
Okay.
And I went, I see the ocean. He goes, good, good, okay. And he was playing the Grand Canyon suite. So I was close, ocean, Grand Canyon, but that's what he would do. And so all of a sudden I saw when I was in, I think, junior high school, saw my first musical, Amateur. And I went, that's kind of cool. You know, the music, the story moved along with the music. And then eventually, as I was in high school, I saw real musicals. And then eventually when I was in high school, I worked with my brother Scott. Scott Stantis, who was in Camelot. And I was one of the lighting people. So. Oh.
Well, now, my brother, my half-brother, Jesus, was a big fan of musicals, and he got picked on in high school here in Chicago for being gay. Like, they teased him and called him all kinds of names. Did you get teased?
I did not get teased because I wasn't an actor. Okay. I had to act.
Neither was he, though. So I don't know.
I was on the crew. That's what I liked, was the tech. And I am a card-carrying member of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. And so I get to work with tours, but I was more the crew, so we didn't get picked on too much at all that I recall. So, but some of the actors did, especially those who like to dance. They got picked on by the football team, the usual fall-de-roll. But some of them went on to become famous or on Broadway or on tour. So,
And you now manage a theater in Madison.
In Madison, a little community theater, again, unique. It's the only theater co-op in the nation. There are six theater companies that are my bosses, and I work for them. And they all have a different niche in the theater market. One is Madison Ballet. You'll never guess what they do. And the other is Mercury Players, who do kind of offbeat plays. And then the other four. So they do all different things.
Well, I think that we need to do a comedy stop, Paul, in Madison.
I think you should.
As long as we don't have to sing.
You sing. I just can't sing. Yeah, I believe it's been a directive to me to not sing.
Oh no!
There have been some very nice people who request it, but I can't sing. Oh. And Music Man's a great one. I don't get Music Man has that had a revival recently?
No, not recently.
Like in high schools and community
High schools do
theaters.
It because it's relatively inexpensive, the rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you do theater, people don't realize you have to pay the rights right up front, and that can be $5,000 to $10,000 just before you get the scripts. So Music Man's a big hit, and we do musicals at the Bartell Theater, which, by the way, is the name of the theater in Madison. It's the Bartell Theater, right off the Capitol Square there in Madison, if you know Madison. So we call it the cute little theater off the square.
The cute little theater off the... Well, let's take a look, Paul, and see what we can do about
that. Yeah, we'll book you in.
I think we can get the rights to the Paul Farvar, Patty Vasquez show.
Ooh.
I just want my intro music to be Grease Lightning, wherever I go.
Oh, Grease, yeah, that's another one.
Oh, Grease, that's very popular.
Grease is awesome.
My son
That's the only one I know.
My son was asking about that because we live near Taft High School, which is where the writer of Grease went to school.
Really?
Did you know this? Taft High School in Chicago.
No. John Travolta?
No.
No.
Wow.
Yes. Sure.
Although Adrian Zmed went to my high school. He went to Lane Tech, by the way.
Who's that?
Adrian Zmed was
really?
In Grease, too. Yes.
Oh. Yeah, you know him. Yeah. Wasn't he Dance Fever, too?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's about that.
I saw Grease.
Grease is a great movie.
Yeah.
I liked all the parts where there wasn't singing, though.
So you don't
but
like
I
like
the soundtrack.
Say that.
Do they really?
It's fun. It's a fun soundtrack. I like Grease.
I think it's
Grease.
A great soundtrack.
I had the album as a kid where it opened up and it was like picture and everything. Yep. I liked all the music on that.
People ask me what's your favorite musical because I'm on the show, and I go, well, because I do all the old chestnuts. You know, I like some of the old plays. So, and then what about new? Or fairly, one person called one time. You get calls, I get calls, and they called again. Could you play something that was written after I was born?
After he was born?
When were you born? I said 1974. I went, okay, I'll play something new. But I like shows. And high schools are getting so sophisticated with their musicals. I mean, they're doing Peter Pan. They're flying the kids. They're flying through the air.
God. Yeah,
but I'd have to say one of my favorite musicals modern is Lion King.
Really?
Yeah.
I have not seen that as a musical.
It's so good.
It's great. And I worked the show as a stagehand. I got to dress the gazelles.
They're redoing that movie. The animation for it.
It's
going to be more
singing. They're doing the live action, aren't they?
It's live action. Jon Favreau's directing it, and they've got a lot of actors singing on it.
It's famous a musical. The rule, you know, Disney's brilliant anyway, but again, the two-song rule, you know, you go out singing Hakuna Matata and things like that.
There you go, humming a tune from something
Humming a tune, and that's what, to me, makes commercial success because you think about the play later and buy stuff.
So much fun. Well, it's great to catch up with you and meet Scott's brother, Kirk. And where can people find out about this Broadway, Better Living Through
it's
Show Tunes?
WORTFM.org.
There you go.
That's where they can find it, or just look up Wart or Better Living Through Show Tunes. It'll show up, I guarantee you.
It was a pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to catching up with you sometime. How long are you in town for with Scott?
Just till tomorrow.
Oh, just till tomorrow.
The stagecoach leaves tomorrow morning.
He came to watch the Brewers win, and then you leave again. All right,
I'm like that. I'm cruel.
Have a great evening.
Thanks,
and we'll talk
to you
again soon.
You've been a great
week. I know. We're Cubs fans.
Yeah.
I don't know
about
it.
Shocking.
Yeah, all of us are. We love the
and
Sox,
the Sox
too. Yes, but we're Cubs fans. Just, we love baseball. Go baseball.
Not all baseball.
Not the Brewers.
It's like I don't like shows with singing in it, but no, not all baseball.
Same thing. Have a great night. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. Coming up after the 12:30 news, we'll play Is It Legal? It's your chance to win a prize right here on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Joining us in studio for Is It Legal is comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. He's also the host of Singles Only Podcast. A new one just dropped today. And she was great. The musician that we interviewed.
Stoli, yeah. She's
awesome.
She was
so good.
Do you have to be single to be on your podcast?
Yep.
Okay.
Unless you're the voice of reason, which is Patty.
Okay.
And Jeannie Dugan. And also
Kelsey's done it. Kelsey Huff has done it before, but you guys are
all
so dang busy. Yeah, we always need to have one married person on the show so we don't get too
cocky I'm never getting married.
Well, the times that we've done it without a married person or voice of treason or voice of reason, it's turned into... It's pretty. We had like an hour long episode once, and it was actually pretty funny. But
I don't like regulate your time. You have a timer, and it goes off at about 30 minutes.
Okay.
It's not just that. It's just it's just like a comfort. Like people will you keep us on track? That's what you're supposed to do. And you ask questions that are pointed, or and sometimes you drink at it.
I'm mostly astonished by how the way dating has changed, you know, swiping and, you know, whether or not the way somebody looks or, just being in the middle of a date, ghosting. Like, I don't.
Okay, what is that?
Ghosting is just, there are people who have actually been on a date. One person says, I'm going to the bathroom.
Oh, when they leave?
Yeah.
No, that's not ghosting. Ghosting is when they don't. When you start texting and they stop responding.
So what's somebody who leaves in the middle of the day?
That's just being
a jerk. That's
also
mean. That's really mean.
That's just like mean. Yeah, I don't think that's
the Irish exit.
The Irish exit.
Yeah, I've heard that. Okay.
That's been going on for years.
Let's not put that on the Irish. All right,
but
that's at a party. That's when you're at a party and you don't feel like making the rounds and saying goodbye to everybody.
I love the Irish exit.
Yeah, the Irish exit at a party.
I've learned to like it because my family's Greek, and I mean it would take us. Well, you get this, you guys.
50 people.
No, you guys get this right because it's like, oh, you say bye to one
and 20 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. From the time you announce you're leaving to the time you leave could be an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to really appreciate the blank any person, any nationality goes here, exit. Yeah.
Here's my trick. When I come into a party, I start saying goodbye when I get there. It's so good to see you. Let's keep in touch.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, like Christmas parties, I'll just yell bye and then just start walking out.
But you know what? I think,
no one cares.
Don't you think people understand now?
Yes, I think so.
You know, or they'll go, oh, where did Paul go? Oh, shoot, I forgot to say goodbye. And then they're on to the next conversation.
Yeah, no one cares. Yeah.
Please, anybody who...
Except on dates.
Well, that's... Okay.
That's funny.
I was working at a theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and this girl was in the lobby crying. It was a comedy show, and what happened? And she goes, my date just left me here. Her date just abandoned her at the show.
Speaking of comedy shows, I drove out to do shows at Appleton, Wisconsin.
Did you go to Frank's Pizza Palace?
No, I did not. We went to Sal's Pizza, saw a fight, but that's not why I bring that up.
What?
I, you know, obviously you can't get, there's WGN, you can't listen to it certain portions on the drive. So I brought a CD. Which was Patty Vasquez Live,
CD.
Her comedy show.
From?
Patty Vasquez's comedy show when she was pregnant.
2003.
2003 at the Lakeshore Theater.
Yes, I was 8.5 months pregnant. I was 2 weeks from my due date.
Talking about dating with her husband and how he proposed. Lots of details.
Is that on that CD? That's
on that CD. I have it.
Why? Why do you look? Why do you
I can't.
Say,
I don't think I. Oh, I got
it. Holds up.
I don't think I've shared.
It's a very 2000s comedy stuff. A lot of stuff is not relevant anymore because of technology
like
and stuff. Yeah. Well,
Star 69, I think, is in there. Or something.
No, that wasn't in it. But there's a couple cell phone stuff that stuff in there. But it's pretty good. I liked it.
Really?
I texted you. I was listening to it.
Yes.
So. Because I haven't heard a lot of that stuff. I've done shows with you before.
Was the story... I have to go back. I don't even know.
I have it. It's in my car right now.
Is the story about the ultrasound when they...
The wipes?
Yes.
Yeah,
is that in there? Okay. So Steve and I were going for our first ultrasound, and I was 10 weeks pregnant, and they said, we're going to do an ultrasound. And I thought, oh, this is great. I didn't expect them to do...
the kind of ultrasound that you might want to prepare yourself. You know, when you have a gynecological exam.
Oh yeah, I know.
Oh God, is this the that part of the stand up? Because I think this is super funny.
No, I don't. But this was I had not prepared myself to be in the stirrups. So it was an ultrasound. I felt like a little jelly on the belly. Oh, it's chilly, and your baby looks like it's on a Doppler radar.
Right.
And we got there, and there were stirrups up, and I was like, what is happening? And they were going in with a camera.
Oh.
And I was just like, okay, well, I need to go freshen up. So I went into the bathroom that was attached to the exam room, and I was freshening up.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Sorry. So I was in there for quite a while, and I was trying to like freshen up, a little dab, dab, splash, splash. And Steve started knocking on the door. He's like, "Is everything okay in there?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm just wasn't prepared." And he goes, "I mean, I wasn't unpresentable. I just didn't feel like I was ready."
Right.
And he goes, "Hey, why don't you just use one of these wipes they had on the counter out here?" And I was, which is perfect because it's
baby
a splash
wipes.
And a dab.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
So I take one, and the burning sensation, Andrea,
was a bleach wipe.
I came out, and it was for the equipment.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
it was. And it was like a big tub. It was white and it had a purple top. So, but it had, honest to God,
Clorox cleanup.
But honest to God, Andrea, it had the picture of a baby with a line through it, which basically meant don't use this line. But, you know, maybe he just meant, well, it says it.
Oh, God.
So we were in there for 20 minutes, like waiting for the technician to come in. Finally, she comes in and I was like, you tell her. He's like, no, you tell her. I'm like, no, you tell her. You made me wipe myself with those things.
Right.
And finally, I was like, he made me wipe myself with those Clorox wipes. And we were apparently like there's a whole system in place to keep you safe, but like honestly, for 20 minutes they weren't sure. There was a lot of running around. They were like, you know, there are people in there. They're like, I bet she's lemony fresh.
Yeah.
And you know, like the stupid couple that shouldn't be reproducing. I'm not kidding, Andrea. I switched hospitals out
Did
of
you?
Embarrassment.
Oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah, I switched.
I'm sure other people have done that in the past.
It was so embarrassing.
There's a lot of stuff in there that it's actually an educational comedy thing too. Because
right.
I was like, oh, does that really happen? Because I don't know anything about. Babies and women's stuff.
The how a woman gets pregnant, all that stuff.
No one taught me that. My parents didn't teach me the
birds
and the
bees. Took me 2 years to get pregnant, so yeah, I talked a lot about
that. Yeah, you talked about that.
All right, let's take a break here. Well, you know what? We are going to play Is It Legal?
It's a modified version.
Modified version. Yes or no, is it legal? 312-981-7200. We'll try to change them up as much as possible, but 312-981-7200. Give us a call for your chance to win a prize right here on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. I did not give you a heads up that I wanted to play Is It Legal because I know it takes a lot of work to pull these up
and come up with the fake ones.
But these are all going to be, it's legal or not legal.
Okay.
Right? Is it legal to do this or not legal? So it's not true or false. These are all real laws, but it's basically, is it legal or illegal to do these things?
Version 2.0.
Right. So for example, I'm not trying to throw Alabama under the bus, but Susan's going to play Is It Legal? And 312-981-7200 if you want to go up against Susan. We can go the best out of five. Michael's got another stack of, I was having trouble with my copy and paste. Andrea, I feel like you and I are having tech issues with our computers.
Completely tonight, yes.
So here, like Susan, I will give you a practice run at one of these. And I'm, again, I don't mean to throw Alabama under the bus, but a lot of these are from Alabama. Here's one. Hey, Susan, how are you doing tonight?
Great.
Now, do you have a legal degree?
I don't.
Okay. I want to find out
those
what kind
are
of
the
advantage.
Rules. Yeah, you can't have a legal degree.
I want to find out what kind of advantage you might have. Do you watch a lot of Law & Order?
I used to.
I'm not, that neither qualifies you nor disqualifies you. Just trying to, like I said, get a baseline of your experience. Are you fascinated by the law? Because I'm a total law geek.
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so here's a law in Alabama, and here's my question: can you legally marry your first cousin and or other distant relatives?
Yes.
You're correct. Americans love to poke fun at Alabama for its incest laws. Alabama, like several other states in the South, allow state residents to enter a legal marriage with their first cousin without restrictions. Alabama also lets you marry your first cousin once removed, your half cousin, and your adopted cousin. So if anybody is interested in these sorts of relationships, Alabama is your state of choice.
Also, the country of Iran allows that.
Oh, really?
Where my family's from.
Oh.
And now you know. All right. So, Susan, I think you're going to, I think people are intimidated by your legal expertise. The 312-981-7200 to play, Is It Legal? Give us a call. Andrea and Paul both have several laws in front of them that they will present to Susan to see if she can decide whether or not they are legal or illegal. Do those make sense? I was cobbling
those.
Great.
Okay. Yeah, no, these are really good.
Okay. There you go. Take it away, Andrea.
All right. Can I pick? I can pick Alaska,
anything you
right?
want. Yeah, anything you want.
I'm going to pick Alaska. I like this one. Can you hang out in a bar once you are drunk? Can you hang out in a bar once you are drunk?
What do you think, Susan?
No.
Correct.
That's correct. A person cannot get drunk in a bar and remain on the premises. The statute says an intoxicated person may not knowingly enter or camp out. Camp out where alcohol is sold.
Yeah. I mean, that's and good. How do you decide? Like, what's the sort of barometer for
right.
that?
And I'm starting to feel tipsy. If,
yeah, exactly. And what's the point of going to the bar? I mean, I guess it's not
well,
the point.
Yeah.
yeah.
It kind
yeah.
of is.
No, I measure that. Paul, take it away.
Okay. Let me see here. Well, we did Alaska. All right. Let's do Arizona. Is it legal to feed garbage to pigs without a permit? Is it legal to feed garbage to pigs without a permit in Arizona?
Yes.
You say it is legal?
Well, you just kind of gave me a doubt there. So
I know.
No.
This is why we have to change this game, I mean, Paul.
You're like law school.
Yeah, you're like, are you sure about your answer?
I just always ask that, and that's what is it. Mm-hmm. So is it legal or illegal to feed garbage to pigs without a permit in Arizona?
I'll say no.
No, it's not legal?
Listen to you. You're so funny.
I just want to make sure we got the right answers. We're nothing if we're not accurate.
Right.
It is illegal to feed garbage to pigs without a permit in Arizona.
You can swap out the trough
that's
for a
so
wastebasket.
So you have to get a permit then.
Yeah, you get a permit.
So was I correct?
You were correct the second mm-hmm. time because Paul made you doubt yourself.
Yeah.
Right. He gave me that little...
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Is that your right. final answer?
Go ahead, Andrea. You want to pick another one?
Sure. How about... Okay, in California, can you eat a frog that dies during a frog jumping contest? This is a good one, Patty. Can you eat a frog that dies during a frog jumping contest?
No.
You are correct.
You are not. Yeah. The fact that it's even. Go ahead.
Yeah, this health code likely made its way into the books to protect competitors at the Calaveras County Fair and Frog Jumping Jubilee, which we've all been to, a decades old tradition
yeah.
in the gold mining town of Angels Camp. Tourists and jockeys compete to see how far their frogs can leap. However, they cannot. Eat the frog.
Do you think that's how they were encouraging the frogs? that's why they had to ban it?
Right.
If you don't jump, I'm going to eat you.
I'm going to eat you.
They've got like a little smoker going.
Right.
Maybe got some dipping sauces.
Barbecue.
Yeah. yeah. You better jump or it's right into the pot for you. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay.
I wonder if this is on the board exam.
yeah, right. Yeah,
the, of California.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
The bar exam.
Bar. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do North Carolina because that's a basketball home of Michael Jordan. Is it legal to play basketball after midnight in North Carolina? Is it legal to play basketball after midnight in North Carolina?
No.
No, it's not legal?
Oh, my
yes.
God, Paul. Oh, my God, Paul. Seriously, the way you answered, this is why we had to revamp the game.
You are incorrect. I just made that law up on the fly.
That's funny.
Oh, God.
All right, I have one.
All right,
Florida. Is it? We're just giving Susan all the questions. We've got two more, one from me, one from Andrea, and we've already got a prize for you. But here we go. Florida, is it legal to carry a pocket knife in Florida? What do you think?
It depends how long it is.
Ooh, look at her getting all specific.
Oh,
she just took the bar.
I don't know. What do you think? Like maybe a box cutter or other knives? How long? I feel like you know this one. Like you're familiar with it.
I think it's 6 inches would be illegal.
Oh,
whoa.
That's funny.
She got very specific.
Yeah.
How do you know?
Have you been traveling with your knives?
That's scary, Susan.
No.
I like it.
No, and actually, it's less than four blades. It is legal. It is legal to carry pocket knives in the state of Florida. You can open carry any knife, box cutters, multi-tools, and other work knives, and it's legal to carry concealed as well. In most cases, carry conceal of a common pocket knife with a blade of less than 4 inches is, in fact, legal.
Mm.
All right, so one
That's
more, correct. Susan. We're doing a little, these are laws around the country.
These are great.
It's a sampling.
Mm-hmm. Who knew? Okay, ready? One from Hawaii. Susan, are billboards legal in Hawaii?
Yes.
Are billboards legal in Hawaii?
You're doing the same.
No. I know. I'm taking
a page
from the Paul Farver playbook. Billboards, you're correct. Billboards have no place in paradise. They're outlawed in the state with a few exceptions, including notices from public offices and signs posted where goods are sold.
All right. Thank you, Susan. You hold on the line. We've got a gift card from Apt Electronics, pleasing people since 1936. You can visit their store in Glenview or online at abt.com. And make sure you say hi to our good friend Steve Shapiro when you stop by and pick something out. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
So a little bit, I want to do this where we're kind of learning about these quirky laws around the country, because Paul does, and I love you, Paul, but it felt like legal class.
I just wanted to, all the ones that we had in front of us were illegal, so I wanted to make some of these legal, not all of them.
The ones I was handed. Is it legal to, no.
I had to make some
you,
up.
You weren't looking at all of them. Is it legal to kill a hibernating bear? But I'm not going to go through all of them right now.
Oh, right.
But, yeah.
A lot of these we've done on the show already, too.
I only got through, what state did I get through? Hawaii, I think, the one. That Andrea read.
These are fun.
Yeah. I want to learn more.
It's fun to make up the laws too, just to come up with gibberish. And then if you sell it well enough, you can make people think it's a real law.
Right. Yes. Absolutely.
It is pretty much how law is anyway. If you argue something with some conviction in court, as I learned today, you can win.
I only took one media. Did you have to take this media law class at U of I? Mm-hmm. It was in the journalism school. It was media law, hardest class I ever took.
Really?
And he would pick someone and, Ms. Darlis, please stand. And it was like what I think law school would be like. We'd be talking about slander and libel. And he'd give you an example, and he'd say, is it slander or libel? And I would say, slander. And he'd go, really?
Oh, God.
Wow, are you sure?
Is that your final answer?
Oh, no. So libel.
Do lawyers
really?
Just do that?
I don't know. I was scared to death
Make
of
you
him.
Doubt yourself. By the way, Paul, a listener says that you are acting like the guy at the tennis match, like the judge, the ump.
the judge, yeah.
I can kind of see why Serena threw her racket.
Mm-hmm.
Objection.
Lawyers... I it's funny. I was in court today because this month I'm actually a lawyer again, but then I'm off again. But it's funny to see lawyers, younger lawyers in front of judges and how they act. And then the older ones like myself are just like, yeah, whatever. Let's just get stuff done. And you just watch the judge. Judge, he doesn't care. He knows what he's going to rule. And, you got to just got to know your audience, much like comedy.
Yeah, I agree. You have to know your audience. By the way, we have a couple of texts coming in. One about the bar that in Alaska, you cannot stay in a bar once you've gotten drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And from the 224, so one shot of wild turkey and then you got to go. I think I could last a little bit longer.
And then you got to go.
Then you got to go. So we were also talking about my husband helping me mistake a Clorox wipe for a baby wipe. I thought it was a baby wipe. It was in fact for the equipment at the hospital.
Oh,
others
have done it too.
Well, the 773 says, I work in a hospital. We still use those wipes. They made a rule that you can't use them without wearing gloves. That's how strong they are.
Oh.
The burning sensation did last for quite a while.
Mm.
I will say that for a fact. So yikes. Also happy that you're okay. Yes. There's apparently, that was Griffin. That was my first pregnancy.
And there's nothing you can do really to ease the...
Just flushing it, just water, you know. But they said that there's a mechanism in place to protect the baby. And it was only, Griffin was only 10 weeks. And here's kind of the rest of that, the more serious side to that, which was, I've actually talked to a few, and I am going to make this serious, so I apologize to everyone. The reason I actually changed, I was going to tell you this off the air, the reason I actually changed hospitals was because the technician, who was a little bit younger, we got through the whole, oh my God, I used a Clorox wipe on my vagina, and we got past that. And then she was looking at the ultrasound, and she kept looking at us and looking at the ultrasound and was very quiet, and she left the room for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came back, and she said, I'm talking to one of the specialists, but from the measurements, I think that your child has Down syndrome. And then she just left again. And didn't. This is Griffin, my older son. And Steve and I just sat there in complete silence. We were, this was we'd been trying so long to get pregnant. We didn't know what to think, what to do, all these things. And the specialist came in. It was a total of about 40 minutes of trying to figure out our future, what this was going to look like. And could we, oh my God, we're going to raise a special needs child. Is this what we, can we? I don't know what's happening. And the specialist came in and said,
I'm sorry, she shouldn't have said anything to you. That's a new diagnostic that we're learning how to use here. It wasn't her place to say anything to you. I was supposed to come in and look at it myself. According to the measurements, everything seems fine. But I talked to a few other women. That was when they changed the way they measured. Like, it's like the spinal cord. Some sort of, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the thickness of the spinal cord. And I talked to a woman not too long ago. She was my Lyft driver, and our kids were born the exact same summer. And she was told that her child had Down syndrome, and she said that her husband and I and her said, well, this is our baby, we're gonna carry to term. And when the baby was born, did not have Downs. Wow. And I thought, my heart stopped, because I thought, well, how many parents along the way were given that information and make, you know, decisions based on that? And you know, now that I'm a mother of my younger son who has special needs, you know, Declan is not a pregnancy that I would want to have terminated, but I don't know. I didn't have that information. I don't know what if I would have made other choices, because mm-hmm. every child, like Declan, is different. But I, you know, so that's the real reason that I changed hospitals. I know I made this much more like that bit. So this kind of shows you a little bit about the comic's mind, mm-hmm. That we take things, even like the hard, like that moment was like one of the scariest moments for me and intense. But I still like we sort of filter things out and go, right. Well, here's how I still share that story. And all that part is true with the baby wipe and everything. Right. But at the same time, like, it's my way of sort of having, and that's a great thing about comics. Yeah. We have this sort of catharsis on stage. And even though we're not telling you all the really dark, scary stuff, and when people
sometimes we are.
Oh, absolutely. I share a lot of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's comedy is, what is it? Tragedy plus time.
Yeah. And so when I do the theater shows, sometimes I talk about that a little bit, depends on the venue and the sort of dynamics of the show. But people, it's funny, when I do this show, a lot of people are surprised that I'm funny when I do comedy shows. And I hope I do okay when I do comedy shows. And then people who know me as a comic listen to this show and they're surprised that we're serious. Performers is that you draw on different skill sets.
Absolutely.
Andre is a journalist and now a radio host. So it's like we all do different things. We build on skills. We're not any one thing.
I think that's really cool, because I've always, when I saw you, oh my gosh, it was the first time I ever saw you do comedy, was one of the first times I had, you know, met you early on. And I just, you know, it was so funny. I brought a bunch of friends the next time, and then they bought all their t-shirts. And, you know, you're just hilarious. And then it's interesting to know now the backstory
of that one, of some of our stories,
because I used to always say to you, do the one, not that one,
yeah,
but do the stirrups, one with the gynecologist, yeah, because it's just hilarious. But to know the backstory is really kind of cool.
I mean, that's a lot of my stuff. People confront me and they're like, that didn't happen. I'm like, yeah, I combine stories,
right.
But they're all based in truth. And you know, obviously, like, I think Mike Kaplan, who we had on Singles Only, he said, like, comedy, his jokes are either like so bizarre, you know that they're fake, or they're mm-hmm. so true, you know they are. And then the twist at the end is the line that's a joke. But yeah. I mean, yeah, it's how it all is. But I will say this about Patty, your style was different then than it is now. I mean, what is that? Like, that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So you were a lot dirtier back then, too. A lot dirtier.
Is that going blue?
Going blue, yeah.
Going blue. Yeah. You couldn't, it was funny because I was like, I think I was on the phone, or no, I was ordering food while I was playing. And then all of a sudden you went into this bit where there was a lot of F-bombs. I'm like, that wasn't me.
Right. Yeah. Turn this down.
Talking to the drive-thru.
Well, that was early in my career. I'd only been doing comedy for like maybe a few years, if, you know, and that was the thing about being pregnant and having a themed show. It sort of moved me into headliner spot maybe before I even had the skill set to do more than what you were hearing or you know, have a more rounder view and more skill capabilities.
I thought you'd been doing it for a while at that time. No?
No.
Oh,
just a few years. So being able to do a theme show, which that was pregnant. Party girl from Stories of Stirrups. No, I was a feature act.
Okay.
Barely. Yeah.
But that was like an hour, right? It was about an hour of material.
Is it hard to perform for an hour?
No, I could have probably kept on going. I mean, I was nervous going into it because it was my first time doing a full hour. And, mm-hmm. you know, we were doing a theater show with an intermission and everything. So, yeah. I remember someone coming backstage and I was doing a wardrobe change and I thought, and it was a dude. And I'm like, really? I'm like standing here in my...
Where was the backstage back then?
Oh, that we... So at the...
Off to the side?
Well, yeah, no, because it's the Laugh Factory now.
Oh,
we had beautiful... I wish I had pictures. There must be pictures somewhere.
I don't remember because I was there with music. before when it was a music stadium.
We had big
because back then
rooms.
It was a music. We did music shows there, but I don't remember the backstage. Also, I drank a lot back then.
Oh boy! So and I was coming off of I was the opening act for Puppetry of the Penis. So I was actually told to be dirtier the better. Like I came in and they're like as dirty as you can go. So I had done for 6 months these really raunchy shows with them. So that was also sort of informing.
Sure.
And of course, my mother-in-law was there the first
Uh-oh.
Night.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's too late then at that point, lady. I'm having your grandkid. Right. Having your grandkid. Welcome myself to the family. Tell me something good when we come back. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis hanging out with Paul Farvar. More in a moment.